It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, off and running for this 15th day of June, 2020, live from the Fabulous Orange Studios. Hey, yeah. Hi, I'm Bob, and it's Moran Monday on the horn. Spent the weekend working on the studio and clearing space, and it was a bigger job than it turned out. I thought it was going to be. I knew it was going to be a big job, but... So we're still in process, but we'll get there, and it'll be lovely when we do. No sign of Sam the studio serpent. Hopefully Sam went into the walls and is just snacking on field mice and having a good old time, I guess. I try not to think about it. Honest to God, I do. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This one is no different. Thanks going out. I'm not deliberately trying to make all my S's sound like hisses, but thanks going out to Robert and Darlene. Thanks to Scott in San Diego. Thanks to Ralphs. Thanks to Paul. Thanks to Matt in San Francisco. Thanks to Greg and thanks to Gary. Thank you all very kindly. We start the week with a clean slate, and we got $200 to raise here at mid-month, and we're going to have to raise every penny we can get to get to the end of the month, just because of the bills. Because you know we got another bill added into the mix with the new internet connection.
Yay!
But it's just $200 for today, so if we can keep it even. And just do $200 a day, we won't be sweating things by the end of the week. So hopefully that happens this evening. It would be great if it could happen quickly and then just be done and not have to mention fundraising again for the rest of the program. But there it stands, $200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12.5, or 32 at $6.13. And we'll round that half penny up and add it to Agnes's hot tub fund. How's that sound? Yeah. It is, like I said, Moran Monday on the horn. But it's also a momentous day for rights, for decency, for what passes for our notion of democracy. And it's very nice to have something good and uplifting to talk about as the program during this evening's programs, and we will. But I wanted to start with a note, because we haven't had one in a while, from Paul from Parts Unknown. Paul writes, "It is hard to find time to write this. I would prefer to call in, but with me working nights, calling in is very difficult. I do have some vacation coming up in the next couple of weeks, and I'll try to find some time to call in early July. I wanted to write in about two subjects, and I will try, but obviously I failed," Paul added, having written the note, "to keep it brief." It need not be brief. I want to talk about the crimes being committed by the police. Now, I'm going to preface this with the fact that I am a straight white male, and I'm on the autism spectrum, which means that I'm doubly ignorant when it comes to commenting on something like this. I thought the ideal of the police motto of to protect and to serve could best be summed up from this example. Warning, obligatory Star Trek reference. Quick information about this clip from Deep Space Nine. Commander Worf accidentally fired on a civilian ship in the middle of a battle with Klingons and was put on trial for the crime. Captain Sisko is talking to him after the trial.
Captain, I thought you should know. O'Brien and Bashir are throwing a party for you at Quark's. Looks like quite a bash.
I'm aware of it, but I have much on my mind. Chapak was right. I did have something to prove when I took command of the convoy. And I did not realize it until I stood there, looking down at him, blood trickling from his mouth. In that moment, I remember thinking, finally, he had given me what I really wanted. A reason to attack him. And I had that same feeling when the Klingon ships first attacked. Finally, a chance for vengeance. I should not have accepted the mission.
I'm glad you realized that. That was your first mistake. What was your second?
When the ship decloaked, I should have checked the target before I fired.
You're damned right you should have checked. You knew there were civilian ships in the area. You fired at something you hadn't identified. You made a military decision to protect your ship and crew. But you're a Starfleet officer, Worf. We don't put civilians at risk, or even potentially at risk, to save ourselves. Sometimes that means we lose the battle, and sometimes our lives. But if you can't make that choice, then you can't wear that uniform.
Yes, sir.
At ease, Commander.
No.
All that being true, the reality is no harm's been done. There are no dead children on your conscience. You got lucky.
I do not feel lucky.
And that's why, despite everything that's happened, you're gonna make a hell of a captain someday. Now, let's go. They'll all be waiting. Look, this party isn't for you as much as it is for them. Things got a little tense there for a while. They need a release, a chance to celebrate.
But I do not feel like celebrating.
Part of being a captain is knowing when to smile. Make the troops happy, even when it's the last thing in the world you want to do. Because they're your troops, and you have to take care of them.
Life is a great deal more complicated in this red uniform.
Wait till you get four pips on that collar. You'll wish you had gone into botany.
And so, we continue with Paul from Parts Unknown's note. We don't put civilians at risk or even potentially at risk to save ourselves. Sometimes that means we lose the battle and sometimes our lives. But if you can't make that choice, then you can't wear that uniform. Isn't this the ideal that should be in the majority of police working towards? Or am I just naive? Even if I'm being naive, let's just make that the goal. I'm disgusted by what happened to George Floyd. I am harrowed by what has happened to African Americans and what will continue to happen to them if nothing changes. That is as far as my outrage can take me. I don't know the true outrage that comes with dealing with this every day. I will never know the pain of being lectured by someone who believes that George Floyd's death was accidental, knowing that deep in your heart these same people would scream about how their rights were being violated and oppressed if a cop made them wait 8 minutes and 42 seconds checking their license and registration after pulling them over for speeding. Given the outrage, it is a miracle that these protests are fairly peaceful. I'm happy about the people out in the streets demanding their rights. It is a movement I've waited for many years. I thought Occupy Wall Street was going to be that movement 9 years ago. I never thought a moment like this would be coupled with something so terrifying. As a quick reminder to the Horn Family Community Congregation, I'm a scientist who works for a tech company that makes two of the components for one of the COVID-19 test kits. This test replicates the DNA and takes 4 days to process. We cannot let the virus get into our labs, so we have strict isolation protocols that we have to follow, even as things are opening up. There are peaceful protests going on out here in parts unknown. It hurts to be so afraid of something you want to be part of. My colleagues and I can't even get anywhere near the protests, no matter the social distancing. One of my coworkers had to flee from a grocery store last week due to bad social distancing. When he tried to pick up a missing ingredient for his family's dinner that night real quick, he said that the checkout line was not social distancing. Only about 10% of the customers were wearing masks, so he had to put the refried beans back and go to another store. You know how some lawyers start seeing cases rather than people? Yes. I'm starting to see crowds as disease vectors. Pay attention to this. Not that I have to tell you, but this is a scientist talking to you. And he knows of which he speaks. I am starting to see crowds as disease vectors. Every time I look at these protests, an epidemiological nightmare is happening in my head. Groups of people gather together and you fire a gas that makes them cough, spit, and shed tears all over themselves and each other. An autonomous zone built in Seattle is just an enclosed area with lots of people staying in the same place, exposing each other in little ways every day, even if you're careful. It takes a few moments to see past this and how critically important this movement is. Seattle is my hometown. I'm getting a flood of Facebook posts from old friends about what's happening there. They're talking about two stories. One is the autonomous zone. The other is what's happening in Yakima, Washington. Yakima is roughly right in the center of Washington State. It has a population of about 95,000. So think of a small city. It's surrounded by the Yakima Nation, one of the largest reservations in the U.S. in terms of square miles. A friend told me last week that they have 10 ICU beds at the Yakima Hospital, and they had 17 ICU patients. They were working with other hospitals in Washington State to ship their overflow to them. The Yakima Nation is terrified that they are on their way to being the next tribe to face this disease. We may hit 150,000 deaths by the end of June, as some predict, but I'm hearing hopeful numbers like around 200,000 deaths by the end of July and 250,000 by the RNC convention in August. I don't see how you're going to keep the numbers that low. It is much more likely you will be crossing 400,000 by then. My coworkers and I are looking at these new spikes happening and no states delaying or taking steps back from reopening, and we can't see how more people won't die every day. I will add, for my part, as an editorial note, that on Sunday, we crossed a horrifying benchmark. As of yesterday, more people have now died of COVID-19 than the entirety of Americans who died in the First World War. The Somme, the Marne. The devil dogs. More Americans are dead of COVID-19 than died in our 2 year, roughly, participation in the First World War. That's a lot to process. It also happens to be a fact. Back to Paul from Parts Unknown's note. Not everyone is sitting on their hands. My company is not lowering its guard. My company ordered us on these protocols on March 13th. Yes, Friday the 13th, we were told that next week, Monday the 15th, we would be operating the entire lab with these isolation protocols, but we really need you to start now. Don't go out among the public this weekend. I've been working swing shifts ever since, Paul says. We were told in mid-April that these protocols would go until the end of June. Then they would reassess in June and update us. Well, they updated us at the end of last week. We're going to continue these protocols, including my swing shift work from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. until at least the end of September, but realistically until the end of December 2020. They will reassess in September and let us know. I would lastly like to answer the question my friends on Facebook are asking me. Paul, why are all these different tests so inaccurate and wrong? How could your company not know they were so bad when you were making them? The answer is that COVID-19 is new. Typically, when we find something new, we have more time to develop a test. See, the test doesn't work very well, and then develop a better test. A good analogy would be if alligators had never been known to exist before, you encounter one for the first time ever, and you can only describe it through touch. The alligator is safely secured and can't move, allowing you to safely figure it out by feeling it while blindfolded and deaf. At first, you might describe it as a large snake because... Don't say snake. Because you're feeling its scaly tail, back, and head. Then science might name it Snake 19. As you continue to explore, you might feel a giant mouth with huge muscles and teeth, not just two fangs. Again with the fangs. This mouth is obviously what makes it way more dangerous and could kill up to 100 times more often than a normal snake bite. This analogy's not working for me, Paul, but you may not know that, but that's okay. I appreciate the effort. So you build a test to look for giant snakes with huge mouths. The test doesn't work so well because alligators have feet. The next step is to study it more fully, so you keep feeling around the alligator and learn it has 4 feet. Your new test looks for giant lizards walking on land. This new test isn't so good either because alligators are in water a lot. On closer inspection, you feel the webbed toes and build a test that finds large four-legged lizards on land or water, and the last test finally gets you to 95% accuracy. This is what bothers the scientific community about COVID-19. It's very different from other COVID viruses. We're slowly learning that this is more alligator than snake. If they're so different, then why call it COVID? Snakes and alligators are still both cold-blooded reptiles, and of labeling a virus COVID is an equivalent level of description. Stay safe, Horn family, and stay healthy. Keep social distancing and be careful out there. Signed, Paul from Parts Unknown. I cannot thank you enough, Paul, for your observations. While we have good news to share this evening, it comes, as does all news, with the backdrop of abject horror and death that is this nation's hopeless, bungled response to this virus. And I'm not talking about testing. I'm talking about generally bungled by governors in maggot states. We're trending upward here. Texas is blowing up. Arizona has already blown up. California is on the worsening. So is Florida. So is Alabama. God. Flavio says, don't tell Paul about the bars reopening and filling up to the gills in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Friday, 8 new cases, 5 men, 3 women, all in their 20s. Crowds overflowing onto the sidewalk. They don't care. The stuff of nightmares. Saw a photo from the East Village in New York City over the weekend. People out having cocktails in the streets and LARPing and smolicking and tossing of each other's hair and rubbing about on one another and, hey, buddy, and although they don't talk like that, and hugging and carrying on and whatnot and no masks. And it looked for all the world like a suicide party. Saw a note from a friend in Louisiana who talked about going to the doctor, to the pharmacy at her clinic, and said of all the people in there, she was the only one wearing a mask. And that's because the others were probably Trump voters. Who said, well, Donald Trump's done whooped. It's just a bad cold. That's all. And I ain't gonna have my rights trampled on by making me wear a mask. I got a medical condition. Right. Gonna have a medical condition. It's called the Rona. So there's that. Kyle, and when you hear this program, Paul, take this to heart. Kyle says, I wish Paul was able to write in more. He speaks so much sense, and everything comes from his personal experience, which adds something to it. Thank you, Paul. Indeed. Thank you. And it begins. Bob, stop telling us how much you're afraid of snakes. Can we just stop reminding me of the snake? Could we do that? Is it too much to ask? Yeah. Meanwhile, sending along a photo of the Seattle Police Department East Precinct that's boarded up and closed. Jude sends the photo along. It is where her peace stand took place this Saturday. Thank you for doing what you do with women standing, Jude. Thank you so very kindly. Thanks also going out to Steve and Ms. Karen. A little package arrived today. I am the proud recipient of 5 new KN95 masks, and those are going to be hugely helpful. Thank you, Steve and Karen. There was also a little added bonus of a bottle of some hellacious habanero barbecue sauce that will, I promise you, be put to good use in short order. And Steve from New York is sending more masks. We should be set for masks here very soon. And that is a great weight off of our mind here, both mine and Agnes's, so that we know that while everybody else doesn't do the right thing, at least we can, and thereby try to protect ourselves. You know what the good news is. The good news broke this morning. It is a great day for civil rights in this country, even though it comes against a backdrop of our persistent civil rights failings. And I'm enough of a cynic that I can see a cynical reason why this case was decided as it was. But lo and behold, the 4 sane members of the United States Supreme Court, Breyer and Kagan and Sotomayor and the notorious RBG, found some allies in an unlikely place. Old Balls and Strikes Roberts joined them, as did Ann's boy Neil and my fraternity brother. Not the same chapter, but still. Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch. By a 6-3 margin, meaning that the 3 remaining are the wild-eyed, radical, hardcore, right-wing, Roman Catholic reactionaries, namely Sammy Bad Breath Alito, who incidentally must now be remembered, and the more we say it, the better off it is. Sammy Bad Breath Alito, when he was on the Circuit Court of Appeals, authored an opinion in which he said it is perfectly all right. It is perfectly all right for the police to shoot a young black man in the back of the head, even as the young man is fleeing from them and cannot possibly do them harm. Perhaps even as he's climbing a chain link fence, it's okay for the police to blow him away and shoot him in the back. Well, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, along with Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas, who once, by the way, headed the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and that tells you a little bit about what a nightmare hellscape that must have been when he was running it. And, of course, Brett Kavanaugh, the man who loves baseball and beer and loves having his mortgage paid off by some shadowy organization or person whose identity we will probably never know, in order to clear the way for him to go on and turn and continue to turn the Supreme Court of the United States into a right-wing sewer. Those three dissented from the decision today. Yeah. Let's just think of them as the Inquisition, shall we? But the case, two cases. There were two cases about fundamentally one question. And that question was, does the Civil Rights Act provide protection for sexual orientation and or gender identity? And mirabile dictu, those six justices answered in the affirmative. They said yes. The four decent human beings on the court said yes because it's the right thing to do. Because to create a secondary citizenship class, as has existed in this country for, lo, these many years and decades and centuries, is unacceptable within what we claim our constitutional framework establishes, that is, equal justice under law. So, sadly, only one of the plaintiffs lived to see this great day. The other one, a trans woman, a woman, who had announced to her employer at a funeral home in 2013 that she was transitioning, she was fired and later died. So she did not live to see her victory. But victory it was, nonetheless. As various advocacy groups had put it, the status of the law until today, after the effects of the Obergefell decision, the status of the law up until today was that you could, was that a gay couple could get married on Sunday and go to work and be fired for being gay on Monday. In fact, the lead plaintiff in that case is a man who was fired from his city government job in Georgia when his supervisor found out that he was a member of a, get this, now this had, it cannot get any more egregious than this. The guy's supervisor found out that the man was a member of a gay softball team. A softball team comprised of gay people. And they fired him for that. It had absolutely nothing to do with his performance on the job, utterly nothing to do with any kind of conduct during the hours for which he was paid. Rather, this county government or city government, I forget which, declared that they had the right to fire him for conduct outside the hours in which they had the right to control the details of the work. Oh, really? It becomes astonishing that this case had to go all the way to the Supreme Court when you view it in that light. But that is how wrong and how egregious these violations of civil rights are and were. And today, six members of the United States Supreme Court, four decent human beings, and two right-wing members of the court who reach their conclusions for their own reasons, which maybe I'll take a run at here in a second, said that it shall henceforth be the law of the land that under the Civil Rights Act, you may not terminate a person's employment based upon their gender identity or their sexual orientation. This was entirely sane. It was not the law because we have not been typically that well attuned to the needs and the rights of people whom we have wrongly considered to be other. So going forward, this will be the law. And at least this begins to change one set of wrongs. Darlene, with a note, even though it's Gorsuch, I'm happy at the decision, but I'm highly suspicious. Gorsuch's reasoning and writing seemed rather basic for a Supreme Court justice. Well, you know, first-year law school student basic. I don't trust it. They still have the argument cases in the back pocket that if it's a religious objection, then an employer can discriminate, and that is certainly out there. And suddenly, we will probably be beset by a host of corporations who have deeply held religious beliefs. Because Hobby Lobby ye have always with ye. And it has occasioned paroxysms of fury and outrage from the white, straight wing. People who have never known a moment's inconvenience born of having their rights denied them. Today's notable quote from Ann's boy, Neil, this from Scott in San Diego. Gorsuch's majority opinion, yes, they let Neil Gorsuch write the opinion, because the optics of that made it even worse for the white wing, concluded that the Civil Rights Act's protections against sex discrimination covered workplace discrimination against employees for being gay or transgender. He framed his opinion as a textualist approach to the 1964 law. While acknowledging that the law's drafters might not have envisioned the law being interpreted this way, Gorsuch said that the limits of the drafter's imagination supply no reason to ignore the law's demands. Scott asking, does that make him a homotextual? For that, I can spare a cowbell. Yes. Brother Deacon Asa, on the other hand, asks, did Justice Beerbong say in dissent that the gays are free to freeze to death at their place of work? Asking for a friend. Well, that's just an ordinary hazard of the job if you're, say, a trans woman working at a funeral parlor and you happen to get locked into the refrigerator there in the back of the facility. But then they would, of course, be free to freeze to death because freedom. These people. But the blind hog has found the acorn, and thus we should celebrate the accomplishment of the blind hog. On the other hand, the squealing pigs of the minority are they've got their maiden forms in a straight up twist. Justice Sammy Bad Breath Alito, joined by Clarence Thomas, Slappy Thomas, two wild-eyed radical Roman Catholic right-wing reactionary hardcore rights deniers, had a hissy. They said that the six justice majority had usurped the constitutional authority of the other branches, more brazen abuse of our authority to interpretate statutes is hard to recall. With Sammy Bad Breath Alito muttering under his head, couldn't we just shoot him in the back of the head? But Brat Kavanaugh, who loves beer and beer bongs and hot dogs and baseball and shadowy outfits that pay off his mortgage, well, he wasn't content to sign on with Sammy Bad Breath and Slappy Pubes on the Coke Can Thomas. He writ his own dissent, and he said that keeping businesses from firing people because of how they love or who they are is a transgression of the Constitution's separation of power. But then he threw a sop out and said, to acknowledge the important victory achieved today by gay and lesbian Americans, well, I have to acknowledge that. Do you? Brat, do you? What, are you hoping they're going to bring you some craft fucking beer? Turd. Yeah, they're coming loose at the seams. And what really drove them around the bend, Sammy Bad Breath and Slappy Pubes on the Coke Can and Brat, what drove them around the bend was the fact that Neil Gorsuch raised the specter of fat, dead Tony Scalia, enlisting Scalia in advancing his own argument. He quoted Scalia, Ann's boy Neil did. And this pissed Sammy Bad Breath right off. No one should be fooled by his attempts to pass off his approach to the one championed by Fat Dead Tony. His opinion... No, Alito really, really wrote this. Gorsuch's opinion, it's a pirate ship. It's a pirate ship. Sails under a textualist flag, but what it actually represents is a theory of statutory interpretation that Justice Scalia excoriated, the theory that courts should update old statutes so that they better reflect the current values of society. No one should be taken in by the majority's effort to enlist Justice Scalia in its updating project, Alito wrote, probably clutching his beads or raking his flesh with a flail or wrapping his thigh in fucking barbed wire and putting on a hair shirt. Weirdo. The arrogance of this argument is breathtaking. The arrogance that we would let people not be fired just because of their sexual orientation of gender or gender identity flies in the face. No, I'm making this part up.
of the original intent of the framers, none of whom were homos.
Now, he used a little bit more flowery language. Even idiosyncratic criteria are permitted. If an employer thinks that Scorpios make bad employees, the employer can refuse to hire Scorpios. Such a policy would be unfair and foolish, but under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, it is permitted. And until Title VII is amended, so is a policy against employing gays, lesbians, or transgender individuals. In judicially rewriting Title VII, the court today cashiers an ongoing legislative process at a time when a new law to prohibit sexual orientation discrimination was probably close at hand.
Bullshit, Sammy Bad Breath. There's no such law ever gonna get passed, chinless Mitch McConnell. Or for that matter, because he chairs the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, Lindsey Graham. Oh, and then you're going to love this. Sammy Bad Breath decided to try to shoehorn in an argument that there's a big difference between being gay and being black. Seneca Falls, and what that is a reference to the great voting rights meeting at Seneca Falls, New York, in the late 19th century. Seneca Falls was not Stonewall. The women's rights movement was not and is not the gay rights movement, although many people obviously support or participate in both. So to think that sexual orientation discrimination is just a form of sex discrimination is not just a mistake of language and psychology, but also a mistake of history and sociology. Under this literalist approach, sexual orientation discrimination automatically qualifies as sex discrimination, and Title VII's prohibition against sex discrimination therefore also prohibits sexual orientation discrimination, and actually has done so since 1964, unbeknownst to everyone. Surprisingly, the court today buys into this approach.
That is what Brett Kavanaugh wrote, I guess, in between swigs of beer. And then he had the nerve to tell gay and transgender people that they really hadn't worked hard enough for their rights, hadn't suffered enough.
It's not a hard-earned victory won through the democratic process. It's a victory by judicial dictate, judges latching on to a novel form of living literalism to rewrite ordinary meaning and remake American law. Under the Constitution and laws in the new 90 states, this court is the wrong body to change American law in that way.
Fucking moron. Wonder how the tiger mom feels about him now. Seneca Falls was not Stonewall. Because after all, Seneca Falls was women and black women demanding the vote. Whereas Stonewall was gay people and trans people, drag queens, wanting to stop being beaten within an inch of their lives by the fucking NYPD. Off to the dustbin of history with you, brat. And Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Sammy Bad Breath Alito. Off to the dustbin of history with you.
Jine up alongside Roger Taney. Absolutely. Stand alongside the majority from Plessy versus Ferguson. Do that. And just spend eternity gathering dust bunnies. The case out of Georgia was Bostock versus Clayton County. Steve says, you're going to think I'm a weirdo here. However, I have generally gone back and forth on whether Title VII covered sexual orientation. Frankly, I'm skeptical that it does, at least explicitly. What this case says is that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity is in reality discrimination based upon sex and specifically sexual stereotypes. And this will blow your mind. The notion that sex covers sexual stereotypes and therefore now sexual orientation is its genesis in the case of Oncalli versus Sundowner, whose author was Justice Antonin Scalia. On the religious exception, it will not be limited to sexual orientation. There are religious exceptions to all grounds under Title VII, so honestly, I don't see it as a huge deal, but I'm a white male, albeit a gay one. But there is no getting around the fact that this is a tremendous moment for people whose lives have been upended over nothing. Remember, over nothing having anything to do with their employment, with their ability to do their job on a day-in, day-out basis. Plain and simple. Whether it's a funeral home or a county office, the mode of dress or how one has sex outside of work, because one probably should not be having sex inside of work, unless one is a sex worker. Well, it was a wrong that demanded a remedy, and they found the remedy in the language of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. Now, reasons. Why did old Balls and Strikes Roberts and Ann's boy Neil decide as they did? Well, Brother Deacon Asa has a theory. He says, something doesn't smell right to me. I think they're throwing us this bone so that when they declare Trump president for life in November, they can claim tit for tat. Again, that's just the ray of sunshine in me that I can't quell. Meanwhile, Stephen New York notes, Bob, stop telling us
not to have sex at work.
Guilty as charged. I did say you probably shouldn't be having sex at work unless you're a sex worker. Yes, indeed. Then there's my theory. And my theory is this. These cases are not decided in a vacuum. All Supreme Court cases are decided against the backdrop of the times in which we find ourselves. And while the opinion has been in the writing since the first vote was taken, and this case was heard months ago, oral arguments wise, and in those oral arguments, Ann's boy Neil, well, the questions he asked made it sound as though he felt some degree of sympathy for the plaintiffs. And frankly, old Balls and Strikes Roberts has demonstrated over the course of his career a degree of
concern for the gay community that he has not shown for anyone else. It's hard not to look at this case and wonder if, in fact, as matters grew worse beginning in March with the virus and then exploded in May with the murder of George Floyd and the knowledge of the murders of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. Well, historically, the most successful civil rights movement of the modern era has been led by the gay community. And by modern era, I mean, let's say, since the advent of Reagan. With the advent of ACT UP, whose founder, Larry Kramer, passed a couple of weeks ago, and we discussed his life and work. With the advent of ACT UP and the slogan, "We're here, we're queer, get over it," the gay community achieved a profound degree of success in a shockingly relatively short interval of time. Now, this is, I mean, if Stonewall is the departure point, that's what, 1972? So from Stonewall to now is 48 years. And that is blinding speed where civil rights protests are concerned. Well, the last thing that these that people like Ann's Boy Neal and Old Balls and Strikes want is to add the organizational energy of the out and proud and take no prisoners gay civil rights movement to the quantum of energy that is already boiling across this land. Now, many gay rights activists are already involved, standing as either allies or actually involved, affected community members in these protests. But there is a great deal of energy that can be leveraged. And I think, because you have to remember that John Roberts, even more so than Chinless Mitch McConnell, is the most brilliantly evil conservative in America, especially in American government. He it was who set in motion all the voter suppression that runs rampant now across our land with the Shelby County, Alabama case and his declaration that racism no longer exists in America. So he knew precisely what he was doing. And he's giving the imprimatur of at least part of the conservative wing of the court to this decision as a means by which the sane Republicans like Rick Wilson and Steve Schmidt can claim that if we can just get rid of Trump, the Republican Party will be just fine. Gorsuch and Roberts are working to save the part of the Republican Party that says the quiet part quietly. Call me a political cynic. I call myself a political realist. I would be more than happy to be wrong. The most obviously delightful schadenfreude to be had is the pissing and moaning that's coming from the people who advanced Ann's boy Neil's career. Oh, by the way, I was wrong. Stonewall was June 28th, 1969, so almost 51 years ago. My bad. Thank you for the correction, Scott in San Diego. And Steve in New York says, just wait for the maggots to start calling for the head of Gorsuch as a liberal judicial activist. It must be remembered that this decision flies in the face of the arguments presented by the Trump maladministration. The Trump maladministration was unequivocally against extending Title VII Civil Rights Act protection to sexual identity and gender orientation. And now along comes the Judicial Crisis Network. And they're hot, and not in a good way. Ooh-wee, they are pissed. They spent $10 million in 2017 to put Neil Gorsuch into the seat that rightfully belonged to Merrick Garland. Additionally, before that, they dropped $1 million to keep Barack Obama from being anything but three-fifths of a president when he wanted to put Garland on the Supreme Court. And the head of the Judicial Crisis Network is one Carrie Severino. And hell hath no fury like a right, like a white wing maggot scorned. Oh, she got on Twitter and had a plum meltdown.
Justice Scalia would be disappointed that his successor has bungled textualism so badly today for the sake of appealing to college campuses and editorial boards. This was not judging. This was legislating. A brute force attack on our constitutional system. Today, six judges acting as advocates opted to rewrite the statute themselves, short-circuiting the legislative process and in the process denying the people a decision that should be theirs to make on a major issue.
Falling back on let the voters decide is always the last refuge of a bigoted scoundrel. Can you imagine if we had, because every time something happens that the right wing doesn't like, they declare that the Supreme Court has acted as legislators from the bench. When in fact, beginning with Marbury versus Madison and coming forward, Justice John Marshall declares in Marbury that it will be the sole province of the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution and interpret statutes. And what happened today was interpretation. Gorsuch said that that the lack of imagination of the people who drafted the Civil Rights Act should not limit future courts in interpreting what they did enact. But to say that the court interpreting the Civil Rights Act is somehow wrong is to get in bed with the dirtbags who say things like, well, you know, the slaves were freed after the Civil War, but that doesn't mean the Fifth Amendment applies to them. That doesn't mean that the Fourth Amendment applies to them. It damn sure doesn't mean they need to be sitting on juries. You see what a thin reed they're crawling out on? Have no doubts, back to Carrie Severino. You know, she does absolutely nothing as the executive director or 32nd degree noble lumpkin of the Judicial Crisis Network. She does abso-goddamn-lutely nothing. She serves no practical purpose in American society except to bundle money to try to fuck the future. She is as worthless as a kickstand on a tank, as worthless as a screen door on a submarine, as worthless as tits on a boar hog. She has no value in terms of the greater good of society. Her only purpose is to ramrod judicial maniacs onto the bench. But nonetheless, she felt absolutely free to unburden herself of her disgust with the LGBTQ and trans communities, the T in LGBTQ, with the LGBTQ community. Have no doubts about what happened today. This was the hijacking of textualism. You can't redefine the meaning of words themselves and still be doing textualism. This is an ominous sign for anyone concerned about the future of representative democracy. Shut the fuck up. It is not. If sex does not encompass how people have sex, then the word becomes meaningless. If gender does not include all gender, then gender is not included in the statute. Mercifully, she is being savaged in social media, but nobody's going to fire her for it. Nobody's going to take away her economic privilege. Nobody's going to take away her house in the burbs. Nobody's going to stop inviting her to Washington, D.C. soirees. And, oh, darling, that's a fabulous cocktail frock you're wearing this evening. None of that's going to happen to her. And really, her hissy is so thoroughly misplaced. Because Anne's boy Neil will be right back to being a right-wing reactionary turd before we can say boo. And old Balls and Strikes Roberts will get back to the business of fucking voters out of their vote and poor people out of health care before Carrie Severino can bat her beady little eyes. A woman by the name of Megan Hatcher Mays pointed out, the reason why conservative dark money groups like Judicial Crisis Network spend millions of dollars on judicial nominations, $10 million plus for Gorsuch alone, is because they want to guarantee conservative legal outcomes. It didn't work today, and they're pissed. Well, if Carrie Severino had a sad for even a few hours today, then it is a sad she desperately needed to have. It was a bit of a, well, it was just a tiny bit of justice. And satisfying in the extreme. Let's see, who else? Ben Shapiro has had a shit hemorrhage, even though Ben Shapiro doesn't understand anything about the issue at hand because Ben Shapiro. And let's be clear about something else. Today was a great day for the LGBTQ community. But for people like Carrie Severino and others similarly situated, it is a fantastic day. Because if you're gay, if you're trans, if you're any part of the spectrum of LGBTQ, QQQIIA, then you need to be prepared, and their allies, for people like Carrie Severino to climb right up on your back and expect you to carry her and hers as they fundraise off of your backs. And people like Carrie Severino and that greasy, shitty grifter Matt Staver will reap millions of tax-free, tax-exempt dollars from Americans who can only define their own pathetic, miserable existences by the people they hate and whom they hope to eventually take vengeance upon. But I suspect that the people most profoundly affected by this ruling will say, well, you know, crawl on up on my back because we won and we will carry you into the future. Alita, Sammy Bad Breath's descent and appendices. He spent 142 pages despising the LGBTQ community. Ben Shapiro, as mentioned previously, said this Gorsuch decision is not originalist in any way. He acknowledges as much. It is simply a bad outcome driven legal decision, and it throws religious liberty, free speech, and employment law into complete turmoil. Oh, shut up. Nobody's religious liberty is imperiled by the fact that a trans junior mortician won her case even though she was dead. Nobody's going to stop anybody from going to church. Nobody's going to stop anybody from hating, which is what the right wing lives to do. We simply have a decision now that says they cannot, that one's employment cannot be used as a cudgel to torment the people they hate. And that is a victory indeed. Probably the best snark was aimed by Jane Meyer at the New Yorker at Carrie Severino when she said, "Judicial Crisis Network is having a judicial crisis." That's a remote cowbell for Jane Meyer. Robert McGuire pointing out, a dark money group staffed and funded by longtime anti-LGBT operatives spent millions of dollars blocking Merrick Garland's nomination and millions more pushing Neil Gorsuch's. This surely isn't the return on investment they expected. No, it's not, and don't call me Shirley. Another individual pointed out, I kind of hope armies of young LGBTQ students will show up to apply for jobs at Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby. Suffer, Alice. Suffer. But it's a... it's a beautiful thing. A beautiful thing. And thank you very kindly to Jeremy for getting us going this evening. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very much indeed. So we got 195 to go now, and Jeremy needs company. Jeremy would like company. Ron in Raleigh says, subject line SCOTUS, if it weren't for the dire consequences of their decisions, I would enjoy watching these right-wing activist judges tie themselves into logical knots, making the law conform to their bullshit beliefs. Original construction, my swarthy posterior. Oh, we've been over that ground till we've got it pounded down into hard terracotta dirt. Originalism is a giant fraud. It's the only thing that originalism is a fig leaf to allow white wingers, white wing justices, white wing judges, white wing lawyers, a fig leaf for their innate white supremacy, plain and simple. With occasional room for the Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. And by the way, if you have not seen Dave Chappelle's little mini Netflix special, 8:46, take time for it. For the most part, it's him being as serious as he knows how to be. But good God, it is worth the price of it's worth the price of admission for the time he spends just blasting Candace Owens. And he does it as only Dave Chappelle can do it. Nobody else but Dave Chappelle can do that. And I wonder if Candace has heard it yet. Because she doesn't have enough common sense to stay shut up. If she hears it or hears about it, she's likely to give Dave Chappelle more grist for his mill. Oh, and Steve in New York says, remember this, straight is a sexual orientation, so straight people can sue when someone fires them for being straight. I don't see a lot of that happening. It probably will. It almost assuredly has to. but I don't know how many cases there are in which that was a thing. Kyle's been listening along and sharing thoughts. Oh, we haven't worked hard enough, haven't we? Okay, asshole, challenge accepted. Good God. What woman turned Carrie Severino down? I know, I shouldn't think like that, but stop it with your art of word-knowing shit, Bob. You might make the maggots' heads explode. And Kyle says, ha 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 ha. I gotta admit, I think the best part of the ruling isn't that it finally gives us basic rights to keep our job for being us, just like everyone else, but the reaction by the poor white wingers. If it was just a little bit nicer, I'd even make them their own special safe space. Little snowflakes. Yeah. Exactly. Sending me an emoji with a smiley face with dollar signs for eyes and two big thumbs up. Steve in New York says, Carrie Severino. Damn straight. Check's going to clear. Check's going to keep clearing. And there's truth in that, too, regarding today's SCOTUS decision. Scott in San Diego says, come on! Many more than a few of these hateful twerps never liked the original Civil Rights Act to begin with. Adding this LGBT employment edition now serves to add a new layer of sad for them. Yeah, remember, the National Review, which has long been the toxic heart and soul of the conservative movement, was apoplectic with outrage at both the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Pleased to remember that in his one lone term as a member of the House of Representatives of the United States, George H.W. Bush voted against the Civil Rights Act because, of course, he did. That's probably more fitting. It should more fittingly be on his tombstone than you know, former president of the United States. Forty-first president of the United States. Nope. Just put on his grave, voted against the Civil Rights Act. Because that tells you all you ever needed to know about George Herbert Walker Bush. And it's also a reminder of why it's so important that we call things out when we see them. Like the fact that Roberts and Gorsuch being part of this majority is an attempt to rehabilitate the coming post-Trump GOP. It will be incumbent upon people like us and folks like Driftglass and Blue Gal over at the Best of the Left podcast to hammer this day in and day out, so that it cannot, will not be forgot. Oh, I wonder who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Monday to you there, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from the Kid of Georgia.
Well, hey, Reggie, we haven't Long talked in a while. How you doing?
Just fine. Did you hear about the ABC News executive being suspended over racial and sensitive comments that she made about Robin Roberts and the few very funny calls?
Oh, I did. I read that over the weekend, and you know, it's been a busy weekend. You know, I can't keep up with one day's news cycle anymore, because if I go 2 days between broadcasts, an entire world will have transpired. But yeah, there's a rising stench coming from ABC News.
Yeah,
where their vice president in charge of talent.
Barbara
Fedida
something,
or Barbara Farida.
She
has been outed now as a vicious person. Imagine that. Someone in the upper echelons of broadcast management turning out to be a vicious shithead. But Barbara Fedida, I think is her name.
During
the contract negotiations recently with Robin, in the last couple of years, with Robin Roberts, an African-American woman, and a co-host of Good Morning America, she complained when Robin Roberts asked for more money, and she's still probably not making as much money as the men, when she asked for more money, Barbara Fedida's response was to declare, "Well, it's not like we're asking her to pick cotton."
Yeah. And the View's very own Sunny Hawkins was also racially attacked by that. And she was practically crying on the air today. I saw a clip of it.
Barbara Fedida, if indeed that is her name, referring to Sunny Halston, who has worked for every damn thing she's got. And Barbara Fedida referred to her as low rent.
Sunny had to struggle when she was young. You know, living in low-rent, ghettos, if you will, and coming all the way from that to where she is now. You know, I mean, she does still have mouths to feed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And bills to pay, and whatnot. So I think this broad. I mean,
that's the thing, Reggie. We are not going to go. We are not going to go where she went. We are not going are not going to gender our critique of her.
Right. But she should be fired.
Yeah.
What do you think, bro?
No, she should be fired, and she should be stripped of her wealth and privilege.
Yeah. Amongst everything else that she has. And who they're going to replace her with, I do not know. I have no clue or idea. But I hope it's somebody with a conscience and a soul and a non-white person. How about that?
Well, Reggie, time out, buddy.
Yeah.
Barbara Fedida is a non-white woman.
What? Wait a minute. She's a...
She's a woman of color.
Yeah. Oh, God. Is she my kind or somebody else's kind? Is she black, Hispanic, or what? Asian?
She does not appear to be African American. She looks, my guess is upon seeing a photograph that she is of, Middle Eastern extraction.
Oh, yeah. She could be a Muslim for all we know.
Well, hold on, Reggie. Muslim is a religion, not an ethnicity.
Right. Well, but still, she's a minority, Bob. She shouldn't be saying this about other minorities, especially black people.
She should not. But this is the corrupting influence of power and privilege.
And money.
Well,
right.
Money's part of the whole privilege equation and the power equation. Power and privilege are measured in dollars and cents.
And what about that bullshit in the ABC statement that they put out?
Oh, that they're deeply disturbed and they are going to begin a thorough investigation. You mean that?
Yeah. Yes, that.
When in fact it turns out that there are dozens of people, many of them women, who have dealt with exactly this and have complained for years?
Yes, and nothing has been done about it.
Right.
Obviously.
And Barbara Fedida, if I'm getting her name, Fedida, can't recall her name. I don't have the story in front of me right now. But according to the reporting that that came out, she, in turn, has been empowered by someone above her. I believe maybe one of the in-house lawyers.
Oh, right.
for
right.
ABC.
Right. And Whoopi was defending this woman, Barbara Westerman. Whoopi was defending her. She doesn't believe or think that she's racist. Go figure. You hear what I just said, Bob?
Yeah,
Whoopi was defending this woman. You know, she was defending this woman.
Well, the View is an ABC property, so to the extent it was discussed at all, somebody had to have the corporation's back.
Right.
In order to present a balanced viewpoint.
Right. Even Joy and Megan were pissed off. They don't like this woman.
They don't like each other, so that tells you something.
Why you say that, Bob?
Well, because they generally despise each other, and if those two agree on something, then you know that something's afoot.
Yeah, but like Megan said, when they come against one of us, they come against all of us. You know that native New Yorker talk. You come after one of us, you come after all of us. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I just feel so bad for Sonny. I thought she was going to just up and lose it on the air, you know, crying and all that. Which she could have done, should have done, should have let it all out, you know, get it over with, you know, let it all out, you know. I mean, if she wanted to cry during breaks in order to recompose herself and get back to the show, she could have done that. You know?
Yeah.
She could have done all that. But, you know, because this doesn't sound like Sonny at all. She's optimistic. She's not pessimistic. And this is far way out of character for her, you know. You know what I mean? I mean, she's not, you know. I mean, she doesn't come on the air negatively. She comes on the air positively. You know what I mean? She's happy. She's not an upbeat. She's not sad. But this, I don't know, practically destroyed her, you know, her spirit, so to speak. What say you, Bob? What do you think?
It's crushing and it's hateful, but I have no doubt that she will rebound.
I hope so. I hope she does that real soon. And like I said, I hope this barber chick gets fired, not suspended.
Wait, hold on, Reggie. Really? Chick?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not use that.
Sorry, man.
Let's.
But I just hope she gets fired, this barber person.
I do. If what has been alleged is true, and the information as I read it looked damning.
Yeah.
Then she has she has no business she has no business waiting tables at a Waffle House and with real respect for the people who do that hard work, let alone managing talent at ABC News.
Yeah. Let like you said, have everything that she's earned taken away from her script. You know what I mean? She said this, and I just hope they do a thorough investigation. Although I wouldn't hold my breath on that, would you, Bob?
I don't know. I don't know.
I would, but like you said, that BS ABC article that they said they're deeply shocked and disappointed and devastated. You don't believe that any more than I do. Do you? Because you've been in the game too many times to know when bullshit is bullshit, right, Bob?
I would hope I do, but old dogs can always learn new tricks.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess she hasn't because
I mean, if you want me to get out my tattered purple robe with the frayed applique moons and stars on it and. Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby, written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front of it, and get my magic eight ball out with the cracked screen that says "Answer has ye ask again later." I'd say that she will be offered a polite perch on a high window, given a golden parachute, and encouraged to take two steps forward and land softly upon the ground, hopefully never to be heard from again.
So you want Do you think they're going to try to settle it, you know, if they're going to
They'll settle it, and she'll quietly go away and live in massive wealth for the rest of her natural born days, or until such time as her name has been sufficiently rehabilitated to allow her back into polite broadcast executive society.
Right, but you know there's going to be an uproar from other minorities if that ever happens. Because if she can do this to Robin and Sonny, imagine what she could do to everybody else.
I think the number of cases I saw referenced was 37, Reggie.
37? Isn't that a flat? That's a rig. 37. Shouldn't that tell them something? Or shouldn't that have told them something? About 40 complaints? And they still done nothing about it?
Well, but if that's the case, it was working for them until then.
Right. Shouldn't that be a red flag, you know, about 40 complaints and nobody does nothing about it? I wish they would let Sonny speak on more about it, but I guess they didn't want to rock the boat, if you will. She was deeply hurt, devastated, you know, today. You know, like I said, I thought she was going to cry her eyes out on the show today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As much as this has hurt her, I mean, you know. But they've done nothing about this lady, you know. They haven't even fired her for even one complaint, let alone 37. You know? I mean, if you yourself, Bob Kincaid, was head of ABC, I know he would have fired her right on the spot. No ifs, ands, buts, or anything else. If you call wind of what she did, or got her emails or whatnot, wouldn't you, Bob? Or you would have had a straight up talking to, you know, come to Jesus moment. What would you do, Bob, if you were in that position as being head of ABC?
I can't even imagine what I would do, because I can't imagine ever being the head of ABC News.
Right, but. You know, but somebody's got to take responsibility for this, don't you, Bob? Don't you think so, Bob?
Well, the people.
Somebody has to.
Barbara Fedida and her. Yeah. And the person who enabled her should, in a just world, not be working there anymore, if indeed this is true.
But they should both be fired.
Huffington Post, Yashar Ali published the story at Huffington Post, to say that she's an abusive figure is an understatement. At ABC News, toxicity thrives.
Right.
And she is on, she's on administrative leave right now.
Oh, you know what that means. Right,
so
Bob?
she's getting a free paid vacation. While they look into whether or not she's as awful as people have said that she is.
Right. But like we both said, she should be fired administratively. You know what that means, right? Like you say, free pay, she's getting paid, or should I say a paid vacation, right? Administratively.
Okay, by the way, Irish Dave, I may have been wrong. I said that she was a woman of color. Irish Dave is telling me she is not, from a website called Fact Files. She is a white woman.
Of course. Well, then she should definitely be fired. What do you think, Bob?
She is the senior vice president talent. No, she should not. She should not definitely be fired because she's a white woman. She should be fired if she has. She should be fired if she has done what she is alleged to have done.
Right.
And what's more, Reggie, she oversees the network's diversity and inclusion efforts.
Well, she should definitely be fired from that position, don't you think so, Bob?
Again, Reggie, I don't know how many different ways or how many times I have to say it. The case has to be proven. We have seen time and again what happens when these things go wrong. You have to thoroughly investigate. You have to listen to the Robin Robertses and the Sonny Holstons of the world, and then you have to investigate, and then the whoever the executive class is has to take action.
Right.
But you don't just say, fuck it, you're fired, based on allegations alone. The allegations must be vetted. We are down, you know, among other things, we are down one good senator because allegations were not investigated, but were acted upon before they were verified. But just to go back to Yashar Ali's work, that her remark about picking cotton is a part of a long pattern of insensitive statements, including racist comments made by Fadita to people who report to her, according to the sources who spoke to Huffington Post. She's been, she has been the subject of more than a dozen human resources complaints, was the subject of a human resources investigation in 2016 that led to ABC News hiring an executive coach for her. To teach her now how not to be a horrible human being.
Well, apparently that didn't work out for apparently it didn't work out too well for her.
And you can say that this is an example of her receiving what we'll call over at Fox the O'Reilly treatment. Her sources say her alleged misconduct has led ABC News to spend millions of dollars in confidential settlements with former talent and staff, including at least one settlement related to allegations of racial discrimination.
So, do you actually think they'll fully investigate it? Because it seems that she doesn't have a leg.
And she's equal opportunity because she trashes men of color as well as women of color. Fadita said in regards to Kendis Gibson, who is black and at the time was an ABC News anchor, that ABC, quote, spends more on toilet paper than we ever would on him.
Oh, shit. You got another red flag right there, Bob. Oh, my God.
Yashar Ali interviewed 34 sources over the course of 6 months. The sources are all either current or former ABC News staff and talent. Other sources with knowledge of her conduct and the inner workings of ABC News. And most of the sources could not speak on the record either because they were scared to damn death or because ABC News had required them to sign non-disclosure agreements.
Don't you hate that bullshit, Bob? Non-disclosure agreement on what's really going on. Don't you hate them? Don't you hate when you have to sign something like that? You know what I mean? They might as well, cut out their tongue if they don't want them to speak. If you know what I mean? I mean, how could they make you sign something like that? And then
if you want to cash the check, you sign the paper.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
But that's ridiculous. And they should be scared to death to speak out on the things that they truly believe in.
And among other allegations, Fadita also would refer to women as "see you next Tuesdays" openly in the office, according to several staffers who personally heard her use the word.
Was she referring to herself, Bob?
No, she was referring to other women.
Yeah, well, women.
Not I'm A, they're A.
Yeah, well, that, well, your type one was, when she says about other women, she's actually referring to herself.
Well, that's a level of psychology neither you nor I are competent to engage in. But we do know what the allegations are. Among other things, there was a holiday luncheon, and it took place after a spate of mass shootings in this country. And she went around the room asking attendees, all of whom had to report to her, which ABC News staffer they thought would be an active shooter.
Were they taken aback and shocked by that?
I mean, yeah, they were disgusted.
The people who had that thought, they were disgusted. I was surprised nobody responded to it.
Well, they fired it. They filed human rights complaints, Reggie.
Right.
They went through the system. They went through the process as it was supposed to be utilized.
Yeah. And yet that still didn't work. You know, and yet that still didn't work. You know, because she was still being an a-hole. You know? But I just hope that this finally, you know, pushes her over to the edge of being fired. You know what I mean? Because if she could do this to them, who else? She could do it to everybody else too as well, right, Bob?
Well, she's done it. She's done it to a number of people, apparently.
Right. Those are red flags again, right there. Bro, that something's wrong, and they still done nothing about it. You know. But like you said, they're going to thoroughly, quote-unquote, investigate this thoroughly. Like I said, I just hope they finally do the right thing. And people have to stop defending her, you know, especially people those like Whoopi Goldberg. Because Joy and Megan wasn't defending her, but Whoopi Goldberg was. And I guess they've known each other for a long time. You know what I'm saying, Bob, or do you know what I mean, Bob?
Well, sure, but I don't... I didn't watch it, so, oh well. I mean,
yeah. But like I said, Sonny was hurt. Her feelings were hurt. She was practically crying in the air. I saw the clip of it at least twice on the internet. So, you know, they had to. I mean, Joy and Megan were supporting her all the way. They're sticking up for her. They're sticking up, you know, they're supporting her, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as they should. They may disagree with each other on things, but when, as Megan once said, when you come after one of us, you come after all of us. So, you know, like, you know, and that's disgusting. You know, this woman, you know, who still has that position of power. You know, had this been a man, he would have been fired. Right, Bob? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Had this been a man, he would have been gone out of there, period. Especially if he said something about women and minorities, he definitely would have been gone. He would have been on the news all day.
Now, okay, so you were wondering who it was that was apparently her colleague in her partner in all of this disgusting behavior. As brought up by the witnesses who spoke to Yashar Ali, is
right.
Tanya Menton, M-E-N-T-O-N, Tanya Menton, and she's assistant.
Right, another woman.
She's assistant.
Go ahead, Bob.
She's assistant.
She's assistant general.
Reggie, will you let me, please?
Oh, sorry.
Tanya Menton is assistant general counsel at Disney. And she oversaw some of the settlement negotiations that Yashar Ali mentions in his story.
Oh.
She also handled HR complaints, some of the HR complaints, against Barbara Fedida.
Uh-huh.
So she was in charge of investigating complaints against her subordinate.
Right.
And she is described as being an ally of Fedida's.
Oh.
And in point of fact, Yashar Ali says that the genesis of his entire story and all of his investigation began with an anonymous voicemail left for him that said, "Look into settlements involving Barbara Fedida that are handled by Tanya Menton."
Right. Because they sound very highly suspicious, right, Bob?
Yeah.
They sound very highly suspicious. You know, great. Her partner in crime, so to speak, shall we say. You know, Barbara's partner in crime, Tanya. You know. Yeah, you know, so they should be careful.
And so now the Now the National Association of Black Journalists has become involved, and they are demanding that ABC not investigate internally, but that an outside law firm be brought on to debrief the whole thing, and that ABC right. not be allowed to have anything to do with it, that ABC right. lift the restrictions on any and all non-disclosure agreements that had been brought forward in this, and mm-hmm. it remains to be seen if ABC will do that.
Right. Do you think that's a good idea, Bob? I do.
It's the only way to it's the only way I know of to to address the situation.
It.
Yeah. At least if they hope to have anything resembling anything resembling transparency or credibility, yeah. more importantly.
Right. Or non-biased. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Reggie, it's good to hear from you, my friend. You take care. I'm glad you brought this story to my attention. It might otherwise have fallen through the cracks today because there's so damn much stuff out there. You take care of yourself, you hear?
You do too, Bob. And guess what? It rained today out here in Georgia. It rained both today and yesterday.
It poured all night long last night. And we needed it. It was so hot here that the rain barely touched the ground before it started going back up.
So it evaporated as quickly as it came down.
It was like it was bouncing. The rain was bouncing back into the sky. Reggie, be good, my friend. We'll talk soon. That's our buddy Reggie calling from Decatur, Georgia. That is, I wasn't kidding. That story could have easily been lost, and it's an important story because it shows that very likely the entire multimillionaire, multi-billionaire media landscape is positively filthy with this kind of conduct. It's not just Fox. Remember, way back when, Les Moonves at CBS said, Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS. And then he got bounced out because he was Les Hansy Gropey Moonves. He was Roger Ailesing his way through life. And then, of course, there's, O'Reilly, Ailes at Fox, this developing at ABC. And remember that Andy Lack, who was the vice president of MSNBC, Andy Lack got his ass bounced after having spent a decade or more desperately trying to turn MSNBC into Fox Light. And credit is due to Rachel Maddow for the pressure that she brought to bear to be shed of him. But like I said, so much. Nitwit Nero zipped up to the plains above the Hudson to West Point to deliver a commencement address Saturday that nobody wanted to go to, but that he insisted young graduating cadets be dragged back to in the midst of a pandemic so that he could go and mumble into a microphone with the backdrop of West Point behind him. The cadets all had to sit at social distances. They were ordered to be there. Their careers would have been over had they refused to obey that order. They had to come back. They had to live in dorms, in their dorm rooms, where there was no way for them to be guaranteed that they would not be exposed to the Rona. And out of it all, we got a visual. This is radio. That makes it difficult. But we got a visual of him having to use two hands to drink a glass of water. Like a toddler, uncertain of his own ability to hold a sippy cup. And then we watched him galumph and waddle and stumble down a ramp, because they prefer ramps, the white, his team does, because he doesn't handle stairs very well. And so lo and behold, over the weekend on social media, the hashtag Trump is not well trended, shot right to the top. But when things like that happen, what always amazes me is the fact that suddenly people notice. But if you pay attention on a regular basis, you can go back to a state visit with Boris Johnson, where they were coming down a set of winding spiral stairs, and he was hanging onto Boris Johnson, like a drunken prom date. And then before that, a state visit with Theresa May, Prime Minister of the UK, and walking down a ramp and hanging on to her like grim death. And it makes people wonder about whether or not he's okay. When in point of fact, there is an overwhelming degree of evidence that he is not. Not even remotely resembling okay. The hashtag trended for his shaking, fumbling, bumbling attempt to drink from a glass of water. Hashtag Watergate. Also referencing in G-A-I-T, water, G-A-I-T, his inability to walk. And as far as we know, he doesn't have an excuse. This is not a matter of making fun of him. It is a matter of talking about what is obviously a progressive debilitation of whatever abilities he previously had. And when you combine that with his slurs, I don't mean slurs in terms of vicious insults. I mean the fact that he slurs his words and his limited vocabulary. And even something that he said today, namely that, what was it? Yeah, there it is. The pool reporters listening to him speak reported that Trump declared,
if we stop testing for COVID right now, we'd have very few cases, if any.
The horse whisperer on Twitter noting, if I smashed the gas gauge on my car's dashboard, I'd never run out of gas again.
If we stop looking, we won't find it.
And of course, that's just a rehash of something he'd already said. And is it dementia? Is it Parkinson's? Remember that anything they accuse someone else of is something they are already experiencing with him. So when they were putting it out there that
Hillary is sick, she's definitely not well, she's not well enough to be president.
Well, Hillary has been seen drinking from a glass on a number of occasions, and it does not require her to use two hands. It takes two hands to handle a Whopper, not drink a glass of water. And curiously, there are photographs out there of Joe Biden drinking a glass of water with one hand. Me, until we know for sure otherwise, I'm just going to say that, well, everything we've talked about with him has a symptomatic relationship to tertiary neurosyphilis. That's all. That's all. And then, of course, Friday night. Oh, God. Friday night. In Atlanta. Outside of Wendy's. Rayshard Brooks. Running away. From cops. And one of them pumped three rounds into his body. And killed him dead when he was no threat to them whatsoever. They say he had taken one of the officer's tasers. But the problem, of course, is that in the courts of the state of Georgia, the police have argued successfully on numerous occasions in which they were sued for using tasers on people. Well, they were sued, and they argued in court that a taser is not a lethal weapon, and yet they gunned down Rayshard Brooks for having a lethal weapon. What it boils down to is the cop gunned down Rayshard Brooks for being able to whip his ass well enough to take a taser away and get away from them. But where was he going to go? They had his tag number. He was merely terrified that he was about to be killed by police. And it turns out that his fear was both well-grounded and well-founded. So we find ourselves entering the third hour of the program. We are still at $195 to go on fundraising for this evening. I was sincerely hoping it would not be like this, but it is. Just a little reminder. Based on the work that Brother Deacon Asa has done, one person out of every 100 helps to make this program possible for everyone else who listens to it. Imagine how much we could do if that went up to 2 people out of 100. 2%. 5? 10? Well, here we are. And it would be great not to go into tomorrow filling in a hole from yesterday. Or from today. Remember, that's what we were dealing with last week. We were Wednesday before we finished off the previous Friday. You know I despise talking about this, but it seems like if I make an effort not to, then the hole just gets deeper and eventually Timmy falls in. Probably a snake down there, too. Why is it always snakes? Well, let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Lassie, girl, get help.
Yeah.
You cracked me up, Bob. You do it a lot, and I thank you for that.
Well, I'm glad to be able to.
Well, I give thanks
every night for the sense of humor of you and Steve from New York and everybody else that finds some of this stuff funny.
Well, you know,
because I always thought, you know, in terms of comedy, I always thought of myself more as the setup guy, the straight man, the Bud Abbott to somebody else's Lou Costello.
which, by the way, is the harder job in a comedy team. The straight person has got the worst of the deal, because anybody can play the fool, as I have shown time and again.
I said nothing. I said not a goddamn word.
I know. I know you said that.
I'm just sitting here taking gentle sips of my Trader Joe's Yuzu hot sauce and being grateful for it.
Yeah, well, it's good living, Bob. I know you said that there's more to this Trump thing than simply making fun of him, but goddamn.
Well, right. It's a low fucking bar, sure.
You know, give the poor guy a stair lift, a swirly straw, and a sippy cup, and we'll get you 4 more years out of him. God, I hope not. That, yeah, his ramp, his little slide down. Well, he's sliding down the ramp in more ways than one, though, Bob. Come on. That poor bastard, he didn't know I don't think he had any idea what he was getting into. He believed his own PR in 2015, going into 2016, running for president and stuff. He just thought he was all that and a big bag of chips. And then he got the job, which he didn't expect to get in the first place. That wasn't part of the plan. See, that's why the goddess of irony is a good goddess. You know, yeah, granted, we're going to have some bumps for 4 years along the way, but goddamn, it's been entertaining beyond measure to watch this fool bumbling and stumbling his way through.
Oh yeah, no doubt. No doubt, the condemned laughed heartily.
Yeah,
I mean, speaking of laughing your ass off, our pal Joy in Ann Arbor pointed this out to me earlier today. And it took me a little while to settle down. Because there are some very decidedly, apparently, simple people at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
You think?
Yeah. And at, wait a minute. I'm being taken to task by Jeremy in Vermont for saying I always saw myself as the straight man. Straight man, Bob? Really? I mean, you're always talking about naked radio and then you swore Agnes didn't see the snake? Said she didn't have her microscope? Okay. I occasionally guilty as charged. The horror. So anyway. Just to get this sorted out, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda on Friday night, they were reporting on the Seattle protests and the co-op zone there, those blocks around the Eastern Police Precinct, the so-called Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. And Fox News TV Radio Rwanda anchor Martha McCallum, who will never be mistaken for the sharpest knife in any drawer, nor the brightest bulb in any chandelier,
or brightest crayon in any box.
Precisely, you get the idea.
Even the Crayola Stadium seating box with 64 vibrant colors and a built-in sharpener in the back.
Yeah, Bob. and that truly embarrassing color called flesh.
Yes.
Whose, I wonder? Hell, that was pinker than I am. But anyway, Martha McCallum got stumped by a Reddit post, and we're going to have to go to some audio for this, just to set it up, or at least I hope so. There it is. Okay, wait, no, I can't do it over. Never mind. Sorry, Scott. I just realized that I got you on Skype, so I got to use a different platform so you can hear.
Uh-oh.
It too.
Can you do that or?
Oh, yes. I'm
Oh, okay. All right.
and it popped right up. Good. So it comes from Monty. They were Martha McCallum was punked by Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh dear.
Now it's weird when a guy who's been dead for a long time, Graham Chapman, can reach up from the grave and from all the way back in 1975 to make a fool of Martha McCallum. There's not much making involved, but still, it's pretty impressive work for the goddess of irony. And so we begin with this clip.
I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship, a self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh?
You heard that, right?
Oh, God.
What a giveaway. Okay, so that scene has never not been funny. And on an impressionable seventh grader, or thereabouts, who was allowed to go and see this movie by himself, I learned things. I like being challenged with ideas. Did then, still do now. So I came out of that movie having had a jolly good little laugh, but at the same time wanting to know what an autonomous collective was and what an anarcho-syndicalist commune was.
Yeah.
I had a note from Lady B on the very same topic earlier, last week, I think it was. And I said, well, you know, she said, I had no idea what anarcho... I think her note said, I learned what anarcho-syndicalism is today. And I said, I had the same revelation as a kid watching Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And then, son of a gun, here it is. How does this happen, Scott?
It's the goddess, man. I'm telling you.
So over on Reddit, some smartass posts in the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone subreddit, a user by the name of Casplorge, in discussing the de facto leader, whose name is Raz, R-A-Z, Casplorge posted the following. I didn't vote for Raz. I thought we were an autonomous collective, an anarcho-syndicalist commune at the least. We should take turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week. But of course, all the decisions of that officer would have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting by a simple majority in the case of internal affairs, or a two-thirds majority in the case of more major issues. Raz can't simply expect to wield supreme executive power just because someone threw a sword at him. You get it? You immediately recognize the context and the source?
Yeah.
I think that's hilarious. But no, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, where the sole task in life that Martha McCallum has is to keep Emery and Marvelline shitting themselves in there in the They're in their single wide and they're matching Barca loungers. No, this was a sign.
Wait a minute. Did she dismiss it merely as left-wing doublespeak?
No. she told Emery and Marveline to shit harder because the anarcho-syndicalists are coming.
Oh, dear. Well, you can't expect Martha to have a sense, you know, to have a touchstone in the form of Monty Python's Flying Circus now, can you? Whether
what
the
she,
TV
no, no,
series...
What she actually said, she pointed to it as good news, Scott. Good news of infighting among the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone protesters.
And there you go.
Infighting. Yeah. What do you want to bet Martha McCollum's another one of those people with one of those Harvard degrees?
Well, I wonder if her little IFB in her ear was just burning the hell up. Well, maybe her producer didn't know.
Right.
Who the hell knows with that crew? I mean, come on. Jesus.
And even at the Fox News Daily Caller Twitter page, a few people caught it and said she does know that the lines that she read come directly from Monty Python. Search for the Holy Grail. Did Fox just get punked? Another reply. Fox News quotes a post from Reddit quoting Monty Python, and then the Daily Caller tweets the Fox video. My goodness, these people are stupid. Go look for it. Come see the violence inherent in the system. Help, help, I'm being repressed. Oh, yeah, I know.
Well, can you expect these people to know anything about pop culture or to have a sense of humor?
Well, truth be told, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is kind of ancient history at this point.
Well, no, wait a minute. Some things are everlasting. Some things never go out of style or fashion. Anybody who is really, who knows a little something about a little something, you know, we pick this up, if not directly by osmosis, or we should anyway. This is what one of the many things that troubles me about Trump. He never laughs, and he doesn't have a family pet, as far as I can tell. Those are two warning signals right there that the man is, like, up to no good.
You know, so if there was some way of tracking the number of times that I bite my tongue and don't say something that I shouldn't say because off the cuff I think it might be funny, people would be prouder of me than they are. Because you just said he doesn't have a family pet, and what I didn't say, I am so proud of. Yay me.
Well, it's true, Bob. I mean, a lot of these twerps, these hateful twerps, they have no lightness of spirit, you know? And that's just one of their goddamn problems.
Yeah.
It isn't that.
And
I
see, I'm in trouble again already.
Oh, dear. Here we go.
I just got a note from Jeremy in Vermont. Easy on the single wides, Bob. I live in one. I'm single, don't have kids, don't need the full house, and my cat doesn't seem to care. No, I was just pointing out the circumstances. I wasn't criticizing the single wide. It's where Emery and Marveline live, in their matching Barca loungers. And I, for one, even Agnes is hollering through the window over here next to the studio. See, that was Agnes. Did you hear that? I will kick your ass. But I would love to have a single wide, especially if it was a single wide that didn't have a what in it, Scott? A what in it? A serpent, Scott. A serpent.
A serpent. Yes. Well, I thought we were going to drop the serpent, as it were. I didn't want to bring it up. I had notes on things witty things to say about Sam.
Agnes just yelled at me, go buy me some apples, and she's perfectly willing to have a conversation with it. Well, anyway, just to put a bow on all of this,
okay,
you might actually like to hear the clip of Martha McCallum.
Well, I was wondering when we were going to hear what Martha had to say.
Martha, Martha, Martha. Play, damn you.
And we're also learning that there is infighting among some of the occupiers and some signs of rebellion against Raz Simone, who we introduced you to here on the story last night. One posting on social media that has now been deleted read this: I didn't vote for Raz. I thought we were an autonomous collective, an anarcho-syndicalist commune at the least. We should take turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week. That's just part of that. Shelby Talbot Alcott is a reporter from the Daily Caller who has been on the ground there in Seattle, and she joins me now. Shelby, welcome. Good to have you here tonight. I know that you have been in and around the area, and you have talked to some of the people there. What are you learning?
So one of the biggest things you just mentioned was that a lot of these protesters do not agree with Raz becoming this warlord. Oh, we spoke to a few of them who were manning the entry points here in Seattle, and they say that his idea of what he wants Chaz to become is not what the majority of the people inside want. So there's definitely some infighting. It's a little bit difficult because they want no rules, but this is a society used to living by rules.
You know, in terms of what it's like for the people who are in there, you know, is it getting messy? Is it well maintained? You know, what's the order like there?
Where are the people pooping?
So we went down last night. It was pretty peaceful, although we have seen numerous reports. Tensions are high. Lots of people have seen guns being carried around. But the community is becoming more organized by the hour, it seems. They've developed a no-cop co-op, which has all of these goods for free. You just, I think they say you just have to be kind to receive the products.
The horror.
They're really developing a community. They're developing a little bit more organization between entry points. So they're here for the long haul.
Yeah. You talked to some people who live in the area who are less than happy with what's developed in their neighborhood. Here's one of those folks. Let's hear from them first, and you can tell us more about him.
Come here, and I will walk you through here at night, and you can see it for yourself. You can see that we don't have a right to vote for stuff here anymore. You can see the demands where they say they want the pensions taken away from every police officer in Seattle. But they took our rights away, and that's not okay. Like, just, it's not political. It's just not okay.
Wait a minute. Point of order.
Wow. That's stunning. This is a citizen of Seattle who obviously doesn't feel safe enough to even have his face revealed to say that he just misses order in his community.
You can't fool me.
Yeah, so this man goes by Brandon. He asked us not to release his last name because he's already spoken out against this situation and has gotten threatened. He was on the verge of tears in this interview. The full thing will be airing at the Daily Caller shortly, but
We waved an onion in front of his face, and he was on the verge of tears. We're the Daily Caller.
He said his name was Brandon? You can't fool me, Bob. We both know that's a talking point from the pit of hell by the devil himself.
Absolutely.
That voice.
And meanwhile, Agnes shot me a link from the Hollywood Reporter. John Cleese has now weighed in on this kerfuffle. Fresh from being outraged at the censorship of one of the most famous episodes ever of Fawlty Towers.
Yes, I remember that.
John Cleese said, breaking, no one at Fox News has ever seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Because they haven't.
Well, it is bad enough. This thing has gone into levels now, Bob. You've taken us down a pathway into madness itself. So you've got the anchor back at home base there, clueless, utterly clueless, getting a talking head to call in with penetrating analyses of an ancient Python bit, okay? And now you've got sound bites from the devil on the street decrying how horrible it is. I mean, how many fucking layers? This is like those platters that you see at Super Bowl parties. The 15 layer with the sour cream and this, and then the guacamole. And, oh, Jesus.
There's just yummy, yummy white wing stupid comedy gold all the way down. Wait, thought I liked the shredded cheese, but no, there's the sour cream. Oh, my God, guacamole. Wait, refried beans. Jesus, there's taco meat under here. It's all so
Dig
wonderful.
Right in. There's
it's all so
all.
Wonderful.
I just. And these folks are, in the minds of many, winning. Emery and Marveline and the Barca Loungers that match, do those Barca Loungers also actually bark? Jesus, that would be a treat.
No, Emery and Marveline take care of that by howling at the TV set while they're watching Fox.
Oh, well, I kind of wanted to hear the Barca Loungers actually bark and wail.
Usually it's Kyle that I get near to paroxysms of fit throwing, but I think I've pushed Jeremy to that point this evening. Wait a goddamn minute. Was the guy with his face covered and voice changed afraid his neighbors would find out the steal that he was getting on insurance? Yeah, I know. Yeah, Liberty Boochamug.
I'm telling you, can you imagine? Can we possibly stand four more years of this? And they'll piss and moan about something else once Biden gets in there and picks his cabinet.
As we get nearer, and especially if Biden can manage to win, we're going to have to, in the words of the New Testament, gird up our loins. Because the multi-limbed amorphous aliens on Norblap 9 will be able to hear the snowflake shrieks of the white wing. Ugh.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, Bob. Come on, it'll be fun.
I'm trying to maintain a positive attitude, yeah. Now, and by the way, Lee in New York jumped in and said, I'll say it if you won't, Bob. Trump says, here, boy, and Pence is suddenly by his side. See, he does have an obedient pet.
Okay. I sit corrected.
You wanted me to clear something up for you.
Yeah, earlier when you were talking to Reggie, when the hell did, first of all, that whole thing with Good Morning America and the ABC executive, that crew has been a Mickey Mouse operation for some time now, so there's that, okay? But when did David Hartman leave Good Morning America? Where have I been? What
you know, it's so funny. When I think Good Morning America, I think David Hartman and Nancy Dessau.
Yeah, that warm, toothy grin of David Hartman.
and that lovely baritone bass of his. But also Nancy Dessau, because she was an accomplished actor before she became the co-host of Good Morning America.
Yes, she was.
And particularly in my favorite comedy of the late 20th century, The In-Laws.
Which, by the way, Bob, I have ordered, and it arrived the other day, the Blu-ray, and I am looking forward to watching it again. It's been
years. Please
tell
me there's some wonderful deliciousness, commentary to it.
Let me look at the back of the DVD case, and I haven't even unsealed it.
But we were talking about straight men and straight women, and Nancy Dessau was magnificent because she didn't have an obviously funny line, but yet was funny. And, of course, most particularly my favorite line that she utters in that movie, the daughter says, Mr. Ricardo. And the light goes on for Nancy Dessau's character, and she says, that crazy little bastard's involved your poor father in something.
Well, it says on the back here, Blu-ray Special Edition features new 2K digital restoration with uncompressed monaural soundtrack, audio commentary from 2003 featuring director Arthur Hiller, actors Alan Arkin, and Peter Falk.
Oh,
and
be still my
Andrew,
heart.
writer Andrew Bergman, new interview with Arkin in support of the in-laws, a new interview program featuring actors Ed Begley Jr., Nancy DeSalt, James Hong, David Paymer, trailer plus a booklet featuring, God, I would open this now, featuring the comedy writer Stephen Weiner and a 2011 recollection of the making of the film by Arthur Hiller. God damn, I'm glad I treated myself to this.
Given the fact that I can just about recite the entire movie word for word, I got to see that.
Well, that's what kind of inspired me to order it, because every so often you will throw out a reference to the in-laws, and it's, like I said, it's been years since I've seen it, and I said, well, you know, I could stream it somewhere. Well, why not just buy the damn Blu-ray, which I did. That's where my emergency COVID-19 relief money went.
Okay, well, I got to know, what did set you back?
Oh, God. Now, let me...
just so I can start saving nickels.
I'll have to look it up, because I don't remember offhand. I don't think it was more than $15, maybe 20 at the outside. It wasn't that much. And for all that entertainment, Jesus. I mean, and a booklet? I mean, come on. Where else do you get that?
Oh, my. Okay. That's going to happen.
Well, you ought to, because you work hard. You deserve... And you probably should be sitting there reciting it as the film plays. But, it, you know, the extras, that's
you
the
know,
coolest
if Billy and,
thing.
You know, if Billy and Bing had ever made it back to the mainland, they would have been the co-hosts of the Chinese Evening News. That's how beloved they were.
See, 40 years ago, 35, 40 years ago, we thought that VHS video was the hot thing. And I guess it was. And then DVDs. But now with Blu-rays and these pristine, I also ordered, the same day I ordered this, I had just recently finished reading the novel, and God, it's a thick novel, The Caine Mutiny by Herman Woke, okay? And have loved the movie for years. And I said, well, by God, I'm going to own the movie. And I got that, I think, for less than $10. But just a pristine print. And a lovely Blu-ray, not many features, there were a few, but goddamn, that's one of the great movies. You know, that's Trump. Trump is.
Oh yeah, well, I played the steel balls strawberry business, the breakdown on the stand.
Yeah.
A number of times.
And the book is quite a bit different than the film. I had obviously never read the book until a couple of weeks ago. I finished it. And it took me a while to get through it, but man, the film is more Willie Keith centric, and what goes on the ship. There's a whole bunch more in the book that I had no idea about.
Well, and by the way, serving as this evening's Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, Herman just wrote in to say David Hartman was host of Good Morning America from 1975 to 1987. Just so you know.
Yeah. Well,
thank you, Herman.
I know. I was just kidding. I know he's gone on to other things. He used to be, well, he was an actor too. What was that show? The Bold, was he on? No, he wasn't on The Bold Ones, or was he? He was on one of those NBC series in the 70s.
I remember a show that kind of flopped, one of those family dramedies. What was it called? The Appletons or something?
Was he a teacher in it?
Maybe
he had a series called Lucas Tanner.
Yeah, there was that.
But I did other than Good Morning America and whatever drama he was in on NBC years ago, I didn't really follow.
Oh, I had forgotten Nancy Dussault was also Lee reminds us on Too Close for Comfort with Ted Knight, and then Degrees of Separation. Ted Knight was a voice actor in the Star Trek animated series.
Here's one for you. Did you ever watch Mad Men?
Yeah, it was some. I just not thoroughly.
Do you remember episode when Roger Sterling and his second wife, Jane, went to a party and they tripped on LSD?
Nope, missed that one.
Because there's a scene in there where he's sitting there ripped to the tits on acid, good acid too, I'm sure, back then. sitting there on the sofa, looking down at the table on which there's a Life magazine and a full-page ad for a hair coloring for men to cover up the gray. And the ad invites you to see the man in the ad is a big head of a man. And on one side, the hair is treated with this wonderful hair coloring product. And the other side of the head is still gray. And the print ad invites you to put a hand over the side that's gray and imagine how younger you'll look. The man in the ad is Ted Knight.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was really an ad from back then?
Yeah, an actual, because I remember seeing the ad years ago, back in the 60s. I forget what the product was, but I remember the fucking ad. So, anyway, God, we tangents galore. Didn't she used to dance on the block down in Baltimore? I remember her from the Broom Broom Room.
Oh, and Sparky, something I mentioned earlier. I wonder if Candace Owens knew about what Dave Chappelle said about her. And yes, Sparky provided her tweet.
To every Democrat tweeting me the clip of Dave Chappelle insulting me, I'm not a leftist. I have a sense of humor, and I think comedians should make fun of people. Dave Chappelle is one of the greatest comedians of all time, and I made it into one of his specials. That's power.
Yeah. She thinks that he gave her power.
Well,
she's a bigger idiot than I thought she was.
Did you? This has come to light in the last couple of days about Jay Farrow of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
was stopped and held at gunpoint, I believe, by the police.
Right.
Did you hear about that?
Yep, I did. He talked about how harrowing it was.
Yo, shit. No shit. I mean, it's scary. I mean, I don't need to tell you how scary it is. And it's not near as scary for any of us. You know, I'm thinking of what something that Tracy said the other day about, you know, I appreciate your interest and concern, but don't ask me how I'm doing because I'll tell you. You know, and her son, and you know, it's we don't. There's no way to imagine if you're white. I mean, we can see what's going on. We can see the events on TV. But unless you've actually been in somebody's skin in that circumstance, and it's not a temporary thing, this is your life. Welcome to your fucking life. Unless we could trade places to that extent, to that degree, there's no way to imagine. I mean, we can have a sense of it. We can have an intellectual understanding of it. But God damn. You know, and something as mundane and ordinary and trivial as going out for a ride in the car and going to 7-Eleven to buy a Slurpee can be a life-changing and or life-ending act if the confluence of circumstances conspire and you come up against something that you just had no reason to think that would ever happen to you, even though you knew it very well could. You just kind of hoped against hope that it wouldn't, you know?
Yeah.
So David Hartman's not on Good Morning America anymore. My. You know, that was that show was the first thing that any of the other two broadcast networks threw up against the Today Show that ever gave it any trouble.
I love how you put that the other two networks threw up.
Well, because I know for decades even, CBS tried, oh, God, all manner. I mean, Captain Kangaroo wasn't cutting it up against the Today Show, so they moved that to Saturdays. And, like, thing after thing after thing after thing in that 7 a.m. Eastern time slot got run over by today each and every 13-week rating period. And then in, I guess it was 75 or 76, ABC came up with Good Morning America. And at first, the Today Show just kind of scoffed, being imperious and invincible since 1952. But they finally caught up and overtook them. And it wasn't until the era of Jane Pauley, Brian Gumbel, and Willard Scott, they brought his ass up from Washington to do the weather, that he in essence became the modern day J. Fred Muggs of the Today Show.
That's cold.
And that's the effect that was the comic relief. That's what Willard's job was. I mean, really, when it comes right down to it. His book is fascinating. If you ever get a chance to read it, Willard Scott's Joy of Living. There's a few parts of it. Being a Southern boy, you know, Willard is a product of his era, of his age, okay? But by and large, he's a decent human being, you know? But anyway, how the hell did I get on to Willard?
You know, I've learned not to ask questions like that long since, Scott, so.
Yeah, but we segue from thing to thing, from tangent to tangent, from ship to shore.
You call it segueing, I call it hopping.
Oh, well, I don't know, Bob, I just try to do the best I can. Let me put in one little pitch for fundraising. And I was so thrilled at how easy it was on the Horn site to donate some bucks. Took less than a minute and a half, okay? And I hate to tell you this, but today is my last call to the Horn. Today, what? Let me repeat that.
What?
Today is my last call to the Horn as a 65-year-old, because tomorrow,
okay,
I turn 66. So in honor of that august occasion, 66 bucks is probably too much for most folks, but I'm sure you can come up with $6.66.
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah. Oh, no, people will love that. Everybody loves kicking $6.66 to the Horn, Scott.
Yeah, and if you're feeling really great, make it $16.66. Hell, I may kick in another 16 bucks just for laughs. Because I came up with the idea. But I'm telling you, this is worth, you know, my calls notwithstanding, this is a worthwhile daily enterprise that Bob is up to. And I know the expansive grounds of the Horn land have a lot of trees, but there ain't no money trees out back.
No, those died years ago.
Go out back with your bushel basket and your ladder and pick you a crop.
I did manage, however, yesterday to prove the truth of the natural law of nature that says the most powerful means of causing it to rain is a middle-aged white man sweating a lawnmower through his yard. I had no sooner pushed the mower back to the front porch than the heavens opened up and poured just as I finished the main area surrounding the house.
Well, it's that same dynamic back when I was a smoker. And would stand at the bus stop, and the bus was supposed to come, and it didn't come, so you light up a cigarette, and sure as hell, coming around the corner is the A-12 bus, you know?
Exactly. And I was actually thinking about, you know, Naked Radio and everything. I was thinking about finding a place on the acre that had closed sight lines to all my neighbors, and so I could, you know, do some nude sunbathing. And then I realized that with my luck, that would be the moment that the Google satellite flew over and took the Google Earth photograph of my home. And there I'd be.
What sort of sunscreen would you need to use, Bob? Because you're of that
It doesn't. There is no sunscreen that works on me. That's the whole point, Scott. Because sunscreen, for instance, SPF 30 gives you 30 times your normal resistance to the sun. Well, I may have flunked 8th grade algebra 1, but I know that 30 times 0 is still fucking 0.
Well, you have trouble with the light in the refrigerator.
Exactly.
Didn't you have to unscrew that thing?
It's that or get covered in solar, you know, get covered in solar cane just for reaching in to pull out a piece of bologna.
The life that you live, Bob. It's a wonder you've made it as far as you have, my boy.
Well, we did. We were, Agnes and I worked like wild, clearing things out, and we made tremendous progress. It's just that we've got to make more.
Now, what is the ultimate plan? Are you going to reconfigure it?
I want to, so that it will be video friendly.
Well, that'll be great.
And not such a mass of wires and cables.
All snaked together, you mean?
Shut up.
Like,
if you feel like shutting up some more, you're free to do that, too.
I told you about my cords and cables box or bag or whatever it is in the closet there. I find that I need a connector or a little piece of coax or something, and I go drag the box into the living room, reach in, and pull out this spaghetti mass of electronics.
Yeah, well, see, what happens to me, though, is I have that box. I mean, the entire studio is Bob's Home for Wayward Hardware, okay?
Yeah, yeah. And
I got the box of wires. But when I need a wire, it is guaranteed that whatever wire I need, whatever cable I need, whatever connector I need, is the one connector I have never purchased.
Yeah. Yeah, you cut out there, but I get where you're going.
It's the one connector I have never purchased, and so, yeah. You know, often running we go. Well, you have been received nicely. Ralph's jumped in, answering your challenge with 616. Cynthia answers with 717. Oh, dear God, the ciphering.
It's 666.
I know. But still, 1666. 23.83. Barbara jumped in with 1666. 89.99. 39.89 plus 5, 44.89. We've knocked $44.89 off today's fundraising goal. Thanks to you, Scott. Thank you.
Oh, man. Well,
Kyle jumped in and said, "Today is my last call to the horn. Thanks for almost giving me a fucking heart attack, Scott. Also, happy birthday one day early." Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Russell in Wilmington says, "Happy birthday. One down, one to go. Take them one at a time and enjoy them. Mine is today." Happy birthday, Russell. Happy birthday indeed. Take them one birthday at a time. It's good advice.
Well, they're doled out that way.
Yeah.
I know Sparky is always chiding me about my forays into the past. You know, it's like Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine, you know. But it seems the older I get, and I'm younger than Sparky even. But and Roger, God knows, I'm a child.
Oh, no, come on. Don't make Roger sound like Methuselah, for God's sake. Not nice.
But I don't mean it in any way but the nicest way, because I appreciate age as a tot. I used to hang around elderly people, and I came to admire them and learn from them. And I'm sure you did, too. I'm sure you had aunts and grandmothers or uncles or people that as a young person, that input is invaluable.
As a young person, it will change your perspective, or moreover, it will give you perspective. And I'm glad you brought that up, because, well, there's a little story to be told out of this. Part of the work that we did on Saturday was clearing out this weird little nook in the studio.
Where the old man lived?
No, well, kind of. Because there was a shelf there, a bookcase, that was blocking access to a closet.
And the closet has not been opened in 20 plus years.
Oh, Jesus.
And when I finally opened it, it still smells like my grandmother's house smelled when this was my grandmother's house.
Oh, wow.
It smells of apples, which for some reason, you know, she did a lot of canning and everything. And it smells like that in there. But in there, I found a little treasure trove. I found old tools in wooden apple boxes.
Oh, wow.
Of my father's that had been his father's and perhaps his father's before him. I found boxes of glassware that my parents had wrapped up in 1981. And they, being Depression-era children, had wrapped those things up in newspapers from 1981. You can't wrap beloved glassware in a blog. It's a time capsule. I recognized the glassware, and then I started reading the newspaper, and it'll probably have to wait till tomorrow, but I got a story from one of those newspapers.
Was it about Trump?
No. Don't try. Don't tempt me. Don't try to guess. I mean, it's
okay.
It just blew me away. And I found from approximately maybe 1965, my astronaut space helmet.
Oh, Bob.
Still in its original box.
I remember those.
With a face shield that latched down and then also would roll up over to open one's face up, and it had a little microphone in it with a piece of wax paper that, you know, would make your voice all buzzy.
Yes.
All buzzy when you talked.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The happy hours, Scott, the happy hours.
Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, that was Jeez. Before that.
Oh, I know.
And thank you to Cynthia jumping in with the 666 now. So what did I say? 4489, 5089, 5090, 5095, 51. So that's awesome. All this ciphering. But hey, Scott, I'm gonna roll because I want to try to. I got somebody on the stress line, and I want to try to get them in too. Okay.
Well, I concur that now is the time to do that.
All right, Scott. Thanks for everything, and we will talk soon. And thanks for cluing me in about that in-laws disc. I gotta own that. That's all there is.
Well, I will find my receipt from Amazon or where and give you the.
Well,
the
now that
link
I
to
know,
it.
Now that I know that it's Amazon, that's all I really need to know.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go out to the store, but maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Oh, I think you will be rewarded mightily if you do.
All right, that's
all
a deal.
Take care, Scott.
Okay, Bob, see ya.
Later. The one and only Scott in San Diego, and on to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Mark from Florida on his way to Georgia.
Hey, Mark, good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. How are you?
Here. I mean, I'm broadcasting from a studio that has a snake in it. I mean, what are we going to say?
Well, not to get personal, are you wearing any protective? I'm just saying. I don't know, man.
I have to be me. I have to be me. It has to be. It's naked radio or no radio at all.
Well, I didn't want to mentally go there and still refuse to, but, thank you very much. You know, there's so much going on that I don't ever really know when to call in because there's just constantly so much happening, just is incredible. So we've got a low intensity conflict, and thank goodness for the, for all the generals and admirals, that spoke out, and even Esper, I guess, went back and forth before he finally gets in a disagreement with Trump, which turns into a shouting match. But nonetheless, thank goodness that those Americans do to not do what comes natural to a coward, which is use more force than absolutely necessary based on their own internal fears, which can take you back, well, to a lot of folks. But in any case, Nixon seemed to be a person like that. But I'm really calling tonight. I'll make it quick, but a couple observations about the Brooks shooting in Atlanta. From a former law enforcement standpoint, and one of your callers or somebody wrote into the show, or maybe you mentioned it, but that yes, they have a vehicle, and I believe the policeman. I only watched the video. It's hard to watch. I have a hard time watching any of this stuff between what's happened recently. It's just too much for me, but because it's just.
Well, among other things, you've worn a badge, Mark.
Well, and I cared about people back then, and I still care about people, and I think I'm a little more maybe emotionally vulnerable, but I'm also a little meaner too. But I could always be mean, but I just I wanted to say that in the case with the Brooks case at the Wendy's. The policeman is talking to him, and he's holding his license, and he says something like, he makes a comment, essentially, you're not from here. So he's coming from somewhere, I don't know, I haven't looked into the case, or if it's even available. So he's coming from outside, I don't know if it's Chamblee, or if he's coming from Lawrenceville, or whatever that cop's determining, or maybe he's coming from Duluth, or he's coming from Norcross, or he's coming from Jonesboro. I don't know where he lived, but he knew he wasn't from the city of Atlanta.
Doraville, Stockbridge.
Right. And one of the things, and nothing on a piece of paper can prepare you for the most dangerous part of an engagement with a person other than your original, I don't want to use the word confrontation, but as you engage a person on the street for whatever reason, that's your most dangerous moment because you're placing yourself in between point A and point B. They're going somewhere and you've interrupted them. So that's your first obligation is to yourself safety. And then secondarily would be with the person you may be working with or is with the person you're working with. And then third would come the subject or the defendant. So, but you are a public servant. And the observation I wanted to make that I think could be somewhat significant. The charges are supposed to roll out, if there are charges, Wednesday. That's the word. And I know Georgia has a Republican governor, and I know the Georgia Bureau of Investigation and maybe two other agencies are all looking at the case from their own perspective. I don't know that. That's just what the TV set's saying. But if you watch, Brooks has gotten away. He's starting to slow down. For whatever reason, maybe the tree line has him obscure from which direction he's going to go from the parking lot. I don't know. But he's still ahead of the other policeman that's caught on his tail. And the other guy's lagging behind. But I believe the shooter of the two policemen is the closer policeman. Is that the impression you got, Bob?
Yeah. He fires after, I guess, Rayshard Brooks turns around and discharges the taser. Is that what looks like?
Right,
looks like? But see, there's one salient fact here, and it also goes to the number of jurisdictions, for instance, that have said that they will no longer engage in high speed chases because they kill too many innocent people.
There you go.
You know why you can say we will not engage in high speed chases? Because nobody, even in a car, let alone on foot. Endangering to the public, but there's a practical, technical reason, too. And that is that nobody in a car, let alone on foot, can outrun a radio signal, Mark.
Well, and if worse comes to worse, there's always canine around somewhere. So, I mean, if one don't get you, the other one does. And like, people have said, helicopters, and they know... If he wants his car back, somebody will have to show up on his behalf and get the vehicle. And they know where he lives, so they can just send the ticket. But it's just a your observation, so I could make the call quicker in case somebody else wants to call. But if you watch closely, the policeman that gets shot at by the taser, from what I've read, is not hit by the taser. That's not the point of my phone call. The point of my phone call is, look closely at that video, if you can get it to slow down or they'll show it where you can see it. But that policeman has either switched hands, but he is reaching for his pistol prior to Brooke shooting the other policeman's taser at him and misses that cop. Then that cop shoots Brooke, shoots at him three times, hits him twice, killing him, obviously. So my thing, and the other observation that's dramatic to me from an emotional standpoint, or like the attorney said that worked for the attorney out of Tallahassee, is it Chris, but nonetheless, says that they left him on the ground for 2.5 minutes before they called fire rescue and had the audacity to pick up their spent cartridges. So, you know, it was just like the Trayvon Martin case. He left that boy on the ground, didn't try to resuscitate him, so the police showed up, was a fellow Marine sheriff, a veteran of the Marine Corps for 11 or 13 years, tried to save that kid's life. But the shooters are showing you their intent by their negligence. So that's criminal to me unto itself. That's showing you their intent. Same with the jackass punk in Minneapolis. He's got his hand in his pocket, he's looking right at you. And then if you look, the puddle that's coming from underneath Floyd's body is his urine. And he's not pissing because he's scared, because his body released himself. So these are things that my trained eye taught me. I've been in situations, Bob, where motherfuckers had guns aimed at me, and I didn't shoot them. Guns! Not fucking laser darts, whatever this bullshit is. And I didn't shoot them because I knew I could out-shoot them and use my mind to deflect and get control of the situation. They don't make that mistake. And they were convinced that I could kill them quicker than they could kill me.
Well, you know,
and
Mark,
I was very well trained.
You know, Mark, you occupy a particular space because not only are you a Marine, you've also served in law enforcement, but you are also a member of one of the building trades. And something that I remarked the other day, and Sparky jumped out there and went and got the data for me. I speculated that far more working people, construction workers, die on the job in any given year than do police officers. And it turns out
I caught that comment. You weren't right. You were way right.
Yeah. Well, according to what Sparky sent me, it's exponential.
That's correct.
For every one police officer who dies in the line of duty, 100 construction workers die at work. I don't know, people probably don't think about it much, but if you die on the job, odds are it is a terrible death.
Right.
So I don't know how it works out on a per capita basis, but I imagine it is still far more difficult to be a construction or dangerous, perhaps fatal, to be a construction worker than it is to be a police officer. And if I may put a question to you.
Yes.
All of these officers so often present the "Oh, I was afraid" defense. Doesn't that mean you're in the wrong line of work?
Well, why? And why? You and I both know why they say that, because they're appealing to the public who should be goddamn scared. It's a scary world, and so they know, once they throw that out to their audience, that the audience, in their case, the jurist, and even a judge, is gonna, if it's a judge decision court, going to really empathize with that statement.
Yeah, they're chumming the waters with bloody meat for all intents and purposes.
Well, yeah, they are. They're trolling and smoking and everything else. But in any case, Bob, I just wanted to say that I thought that was an interesting thing. That cop, if you give a chance to whoever's listening, you watch closely. He is pointing he's reaching for his pistol before a young man Brooks turns and misses with the non-lethal taser. And so for whatever reason, he has intent to draw the weapon, and then he displays the intent and the conviction to shoot the weapon. Just so happens to get interrupted with a bright flash of light. But nonetheless, he's reaching for his pistol prior to Brooks turning. So it's just like watching a play at first base or a game of baseball. When that foot umpires, they're watching the base, but they're listening to the ball hit the glove of the first baseman. So you use your ears and your eyes. And it's a very close call, but nonetheless, it shows his intent. And then their negligence by leaving him laying there. It's just that's the part that killed me, or the case in Ferguson where they left that young guy. These cops start shit, and they can't back it up, and then they end up with a fucking gun because I guess they think they can't. But constitutionally, from a human rights standpoint, in all of my training, they're not following what they're taught. They're taught.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You just raised a point, Mark. You know, earlier I had the story of all of these three Supreme Court justices having a hissy fit about that's not textualism, that's not originalism. You know what? Of all the things, because we're only supposed to judge matters based on what's in the Constitution. Guess what's not in the Constitution? Police departments.
Bob, could you repeat that last sentence, please? I'm sorry.
Guess what's not in the Constitution? Police departments.
What about fugitive slave patrols? Are they in there? They are.
And militias to kill the indigenous population of this country. That's why North and South were able to agree on the language of the Second Amendment. Because in the North, in like New York and Massachusetts, they were still pushing indigenous people out off the land. And so they needed militias for that. And the South wanted them for slave patrols.
Right. They were on to making crops to grow clothing, I suppose, for the early textile industry. So the scared controller capitalists back then, yeah, they all agreed, let's have this in case we need this. And so, yeah, and that all makes sense to me based on what my life has taught me. And I've been paying attention since I've ever been able to. I'll get out of your hair, Bob. I listen to you every night as much as I can. And I thank you for being there for all of us.
Well, I'm awfully glad you're there, Mark. You take care of yourself and you stay safe in your travels, my friend.
Yeah, I'm gonna. There's supposed to be some concerted action with my contemporaries associated with the AFL-CIO, but I don't know if it's just virtual or if it's physical. I've seen both, so I'll be somewhere in the mix. But I'm very proud of the protesters. I went to the protest in Tampa a couple Sundays ago, and it was a great group of people. There was over probably 6,000 of us. Very well done. And the cops didn't say shit to us there. But in any case, I'm very proud of primarily young people, but there are people of all ages. Any case, Bob, thank you for being there for all good Americans.
Thank you, Mark. You take care. Bye now.
Yep.
Our buddy Mark calling from the road. Somewhere between Florida and Georgia. James in Illinois, who knows from whence he speaks, says, construction work dangerous? You're damn right it is. I nearly starved to death a couple of times. Okay, that gets a cowbell, James. That's well played. As to Rayshard Brooks, Flavio points out, for 31 minutes they subjected him to a sobriety test. The cop administering the sobriety test was fucking with him for 31 minutes and then attempted to handcuff him. Of course, that poor man feared for his life. And let's make no mistake about it. The so-called field sobriety test will determine whatever the cop wants it to determine. Among other things, police are empowered to administer something, I presume they still are, they once were, something called the horizontal gaze nystagmus test. And the theory behind it says that your eye, when following a pen, that if you're intoxicated, your eye will be more prone to flicker as it follows. Well, guess what? That's true as far as it goes. But the number of other things that will cause horizontal gaze nystagmus is long indeed. It's bullshit. It should not even be allowed in court. The walk and turn, the touch your nose, any number of people can't do that. And this is not to say I want drunk drivers on the road. This is to say that these are designed to get convictions, even if the person in question isn't necessarily intoxicated. Lowering the blood alcohol rate from 0.10 to 0.08 had nothing to do with public safety and everything to do with the coffers of the city or the county or the state. As a friend of mine once pointed out, the police departments are tax collectors with funny hats. I mean, there really is a legit, when we talk about defund the police, there's a legitimate conversation to be had. Now, that legitimate conversation is never going to be had by the people of bad faith. And by that, I mean Republicans. Oh, Jesus, they're going to take away our popo. And then we're all just going to be living in Mad Max world. Nobody is saying that except the Republicans. But if you think, how many crimes do the police prevent? Very few, by my experience. And mostly what they do is they show up after the crime has been committed. And draw the outlines and run police tape. Crime scene, do not cross. That's why there are so many gun humpers in places like West Virginia who have a sign on the front of their house that says, "We don't call 911," and shows an image of a smoking pistol, or "This house protected by Smith and Wesson." It is what it is. Thank you to Texas T for pushing us up over the $70 mark. Thank you very kindly. That means we've only got $130 to go to finish the day, and then whatever tomorrow is. So thank you very kindly indeed, Texas T, and for joining in all the happy birthday wishes for Scott. Thank you. And Scott, happy birthday. Exactly. Says Darlene in Connecticut, with my FSH muscular dystrophy, it looks like I walk like I'm drunk. Forget walking a straight line. And trying to touch my finger to my nose will throw off my balance like you wouldn't believe. Oh, I would believe. Way back when we finally discovered and diagnosed those two or three rotten discs in my cervical spine, while no comparison with what Darlene is describing, the doc said, I said, well, what do we do about it? He said, well, you could have we could go into your neck and put a metal cage around it. I said, you mean the Peyton Manning surgery? He said, precisely. He said, but you really don't do that because you don't want to do that because I do that. And I tell everybody I do it too. There's a 50% chance that there's going to be no change. And there's a 50% chance that it might get better. And there's a 50% chance that it might get worse. And we both laughed. And I said, so what do you suggest? He said, I suggest that you deal with it until you get to the point where you're bouncing into walls and losing your balance like you've had a 12-pack of beer. I said, that's not encouraging. He said, that's not my job. And so that's what we do. And, you know, I can't remember my last pain-free day. But welcome to life on Earth, and I'm not complaining. So, you know, there's a lot of things that screw with one's ability to perform those field sobriety tests. I got put through one stone cold sober at 3 o'clock in the morning just because the cop was bored. He said my tag light was out. And all that crap has nothing to do with public safety. It's merely to provide probable cause for cops to pull you over, so hopefully they can generate some revenue. Tax collectors in funny hats. Lee in New York says, happy birthday, Scott. Need I say more? No, that's more than enough. Perfectly appropriate. Jude sending me a photo from Seattle. Go back to your bunker. That's good. And of course, alongside of that, the fact that it's really bugging the piss out of him that nobody's gone in and murdered up a few of the folks on Capitol Hill in Seattle. Today at a press op, he said, the mayor of Seattle doesn't know she's alive. The governor of Washington's a stiff. And if they don't do the job, we'll do the job. There's no timeline. And the protesters are very violent people. Governor of Washington has to call out the National Guard. Otherwise, we're all set to go. That fucker really, really wants to give his base and the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys an opportunity to get their murder on. Jude adds, subject line, grandsons. I have 5 grandsons along with 1 great-grandson, 6 endearing souls. 5 of these I walk with concern for them and have for so many years. We all have so much more in common than we know. Take care. And you as well, Jude. Take care and be well. Jude also pointed out that via KUOW that pressure is building inside the labor movement in Washington State to expel the Seattle Cop Union from the Labor Council. It would be beneficial. That would be cop unions have nothing in common with real unions, nothing at all. Jude adds, Seattle's Capitol Hill stand has shifted to an energized, engaging wave of collective consciousness, focusing on solutions, free to explore, feeling safe, and it is breathtaking to be among such courage. Just last week, tear gas, metal barriers, police, National Guard, etc., and now removed. Plus a Washington State U.S. District Judge ordered a stop to the use of that gas. Energy remains palpable, but not the intensive standoff. I've been walking through the many blocks there. Not once, Bob, were there any guns noted. Honestly, Bob, an amazing observation. The strength, the focus, and the matters, the numbers of people from all over answering a call to continue on being a visual witness for justice, that Black Lives Matter. Staying attuned and active is critical. Thanks for being there, Jude, and thanks for sharing it with the rest of us. And thank all of you for keeping the program on the air. Thank all of you who share in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. And thank you, Steve, for the masks. And thank you, Steve, for the masks. Thank you, Steve, for the barbecue sauce. And thank you, Steve, for the bacon jam. I can't wait to try that. That's going to be so good. Y'all are so good to us, and we can never thank you enough. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Stay safe. Stay home if you can. restaurants are closing in places like Florida and Texas and Arizona. Well, not Texas, but because of reemerging coronavirus cases among the staff. Dear God, wear your masks, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face. And above all, if you see somebody in one of those stupid red hats or a stupid T-shirt or in any wise manifesting themselves as devotees of Clorox Claudius, for God's sakes, avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.